From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, New York's Teacher of the Year testifies against the new Common Core standards. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on some possible candidates for governor, and we'll take a look at more women taking an active role in politics. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York State's Teacher of the Year testified at a Senate hearing that even she could not receive high marks in her teacher evaluation process due to what she and others say is the dysfunctional implementation of the new Common Core standards. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Kathleen Ferguson, the New York State Teacher of the Year, has also won several awards for excellence in teaching. Yet, she told a Senate Education Committee hearing on the state's new Common Core standards that under the new rules, even she could not score a rating of highly effective in the new teacher evaluations. The reason, she says, is that her marks were based in part on student test scores. She teaches second graders with special needs who are often behind the level of other children in their grade. But the new standards permit no exemptions for her students.
This system does not make sense.
Ferguson says her students were required to take pretests for almost the entire first month of the school year. The pretests are used to measure what students don't know. They're used as a comparison for their performance on tests given at the end of the school year after they have actually been taught the material. The test scores are then used as part of the new process of teacher evaluations. They're required under terms of federal grants worth millions of dollars that the state has received. Ferguson says the tests were very stressful for her students.
When we have tests in every subject almost every day of September, it's incredibly difficult to lay a foundation of comfort and joy in school when every day I have to send them to music or gym or art and say to them, today you're taking another test. And they're only 7 years old.
Ichabod Crane Elementary School principal Tim Farley called the implementation of the Common Core program completely disastrous.
The anxiety that people keep testifying on is real. The children are crying. The teachers are crying.
Farley, whose school is located in the Hudson Valley, says he's decided not to allow his own four children to go through the testing process.
There is no governmental agency that's going to force my kids to do something that goes against my wishes and what I know is wrong for my kids.
State Education Commissioner John King did not attend the hearing. King was at a forum on the Common Core standards attended by about 1,000 parents at a school on Long Island Tuesday night. Newsday described the meeting as raucous, reporting that King was booed and at times shouted down. King sent a deputy commissioner, Ken Stentz, to the Senate hearing instead. Stentz admitted to senators that the launch of Common Core has been rough.
We have a lot of work to do, and we know that.
Stentz faced extensive questioning from senators who say they've received more calls and emails from parents and teachers complaining about the Common Core implementation than they have about any other issue. Senate Education Committee Chair John Flanagan criticized state education officials for requiring that the standards be adopted before they had even finished the lesson plans, known as modules, that would offer curriculum guidance to teachers. He says, for instance, 7 modules in one subject were supposed to be finished in time for this school year, but only one was actually completed in time.
I liken this to like playing for a football team. If you have a playbook and there's 60 plays in the playbook, but the coach only gives you five and says, I want you to go out and win the title, I don't know how you do that.
Deputy Commissioner Stentz replied,
the timeline was not optimal by any means, considering what we were typically used to when we would do that curriculum mapping, when we would do that curriculum work.
New York and Kentucky are the only two states who are fast-tracking the Common Core standards. Last year, two-thirds of New York students failed the first round of testing. Other states are taking more time to make the transition. Many are asking for a delay, including the State Teachers Union and the New York State PTA. So far, state education officials say they don't want to slow down the program. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week we were greeted to the idea that a Mr. Astorino of Westchester County might put his hat into the ring for governor on the Republican side, as well as hearing that Carl Paladino, some may remember that name, a Buffalo businessman, may take the conservative line against Governor Cuomo.
Well, it all has a lot of importance, to be honest with you. Astorino has done very well in Westchester County. After all, he's a Republican. It's a Democratic county, and increasingly so. But he wins, and he wins big time, and he's talking about the very things that Andrew Cuomo likes to talk about, which is taxes, and taxes are too high. And boy, if you live in Westchester County or on Long Island, it's just unbelievable the amount of money that you pay in taxes. The people upstate who often worry about their taxes, and for good reason, should read the real estate ads in the New York Times and see how much people down in Westchester and Long Island pay in a little box. It's just unbelievable. Well, anyway, so Astorino has done very well. He's been a conservative Republican. He's hit on the taxes issue, and he wins big in his race for county executive again. Now, immediately people start saying, well, you know, he would be a good opponent. And so for Cuomo, but nonsense. I mean, Cuomo's got this huge approval rating. And why in the world he would do that, I don't know. He won't do it. But it serves him well to have people talking about it and to say, maybe I will and maybe I won't. But I doubt very much, unless Andrew Cuomo has a real reversal of fortunes, in which case he might, that Astorino would run against him. Now, as far as Carl Paladino is concerned out there in Buffalo, you know, he ran for governor. He got trounced. You know, I think the Democrats would like nothing more than Paladino to run one more time. He's not going to do it. But, you know, David, when the fickle finger of fortune hits you and fame, and all of a sudden, you know, you have lots of money, you know, you're not getting any younger. You'd like to be known as somebody who counted in the society. And so he ran. For what? What major office? The Board of Education up there in Erie County. The Board of Education. Now he's talking about running for governor again, but this time not as a Republican, but as a conservative. So who cares? But you should care, because, and the Republicans care a great deal, because if he runs on the conservative ticket, and he did very well upstate New York last time out, if he runs on the conservative ticket, gets the conservative votes, the way in which it is determined where your ranking is in terms of on the ballot is determined by how many votes you got in the last gubernatorial election. So if Paladino comes in and the Republicans do badly, and Paladino gets a lot of votes upstate, that could make the conservative party the row B instead of row C that it has now. And that would lift a lot of eyebrows in New York.
One other person was mentioned for a potential challenge to Governor Cuomo by himself, and that's the state GOP chair, Ed Cox, who said he would consider, and he's pushing Astorino, if that didn't happen, he might jump in the race.
Well, as you know, as everybody who listens to this station and these programs knows, Ed Cox is an incredibly articulate, I think, nice man. He has the Republican verbiage. He is, for example, wildly for fracking in upstate New York. He also has the distinction, which he will never, of course, get out from under, and that he's, you know, Dick Nixon's son-in-law. So he has a certain political lineage, loyalty. Do I think he wants to run? No. I think it's much more likely that what a guy like that does is he goes out and he looks for a real fat cat Republican who has so much money that they can run against somebody like Andrew Cuomo. After all, Cuomo's got $30 million in his campaign account already, $30 million. And, you know, it's going to be very hard for the Republicans to raise that kind of money for somebody who everybody knows is going to lose. So that's why I'm sure that they're looking, the Republicans are looking for somebody like a Pierre Rinfrae or one of those guys who's run in the past who can write the checks.
Finally, Alan, you spoke with Ken Lovett of the Daily News this week, and the discussion, at least the opening of the discussion, centered around de Blasio in New York City and Governor Andrew Cuomo and their coming relationship.
Well, yeah, you know, it's so interesting because, as you probably know, David, de Blasio and Cuomo have been fast friends all along. The press, of course, is enjoying this because Cuomo sees himself and articulates, you know, that he is a guy opposed to taxes. He puts in a tax cap, and along comes de Blasio in New York after Bloomberg and says, I'm a different kind of guy. I'm a progressive. I want to spend money. I want to tax the rich. This is the very kind of stuff that Cuomo, I think, abhors. And so what happens is you got two good friends, but conditions can change based on what happens. You know, most people think that the mayor's job in New York is more important than the governor's job. Now, there's no question the governor has more power. But the far more visible person is the mayor of New York. He instantly becomes an international star. Same thing in Russia, where the mayor of Moscow becomes immediately, you know, a contender for ultimate power. So the press is licking their lips, hoping they're going to get a fight. And, you know, I think that politics makes for strange bedfellows. I suspect everybody's going to get along, but you never know.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. In upstate New York and beyond, women have been taking a more active role in politics, running in races for elective office and winning them. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas examines the trend.
Currently, 98 women serve in the U.S. Congress, 78 in the House, 20 in the Senate, including one from New York, one from Massachusetts, and two from New Hampshire. Numbers provided by the Center for American Women in Politics further show that the number of women in statewide executive posts is 75, and the proportion of women in state legislatures is about a quarter. Saratoga Springs Mayor-elect Joanne Yepsen, a Democrat, says when the federal government shut down, it was the women in government on both sides of the aisle who came together and got things going again.
And it's important to have women at the table when we're negotiating issues because we have a good way of communicating with one another regardless of political party. We want to see results. We want to see action. We want common sense solutions.
In Albany, Carolyn McLaughlin serves as Common Council President, and Albany Mayor-elect Kathy Sheehan, also a Democrat, joined the growing number of women in political office when she became city treasurer 4 years ago.
Women bring a practicality. I think that women are entering these races with a tremendous amount of experience, and they are very serious about serving their community and doing things in a different way. And I think it's really important that we have more women involved. I mean, New York State is not among the top states for women. And when you think about the fact that only 13 of the 100 largest cities in our country are run by women, and now we're going to have women running three of our large cities upstate, I think that it's a really exciting time.
Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner won a second term in a year when the state Democratic Party co-chair grabbed headlines for criticism aimed at fellow Democrat Governor Andrew Cuomo. Voters in Rochester elected City Council President Lovely Warren in an upset victory over incumbent Thomas Richards and challenger Alex White. As mayor-elect, Yepsen joins the ranks of female mayors. She foresees alliances and collaborations.
We are a great city, but we can't do this alone. We have had wonderful success, and we've had so many past leaders who have attributed to that success, and we're certainly going to appreciate our past as we go into the future. But we also need to be regionally focused to be economically viable. So we need to think about transportation issues, and Kathy and I will work on those. Stephanie and Kathy and I have already worked on issues together, and we're looking forward to working more closely together.
Albany historian and former New York State Assembly member Jack McEnany believes the women's movement has come of age.
Whether it's Paula Mahan out in Colony or now Kathy Sheehan here in Albany, I think we're seeing women in leadership positions, not just in helper positions. And it's about time, and I think it's something we all look forward to.
109th District Assemblywoman Pat Fahey weighs in.
I think in the last couple of years we've seen so many controversial issues at the national and state level that maybe it empowered women a little more. I know with me, when I decided to run a year and a half ago, we had just seen at the national level a debate again about birth control, and I thought, wow, what have we come to? So that definitely played on my mind, and I knew there were a number of issues I cared a lot about, and I didn't see candidates that I thought could represent me, so I know that motivated me. In terms of at the local levels here where you see women, you know, I think it's maybe just a lot of a groundswell. I talked to so many school PTA moms who are becoming school board candidates and on and on. It is about having voices of reason, whether those are men or women. I think voters are looking for something different, and I think what appealed to voters for me, I think what's appealed to voters for Kathy is that she came out of this with all good intentions. She had not spent a career of climbing a political ladder, nor had I, and maybe that too spoke to something.
Statewide politics aside, a recent Institute for Women's Policy Research study shows that at the present rate, it will take more than a century for women to reach parity in Congress. The timeline could shrink if a major party nominates a woman for president. There is considerable speculation that former New York U.S. Senator Hillary Clinton will take another shot at the highest office in the land.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Local, state, and federal officials held an oil spill exercise along the Hudson River in Orange County this week, prompted by the increase in oil transport along New York's rail lines and waterways. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
The fictional drill involved a midnight spill of 50,000 gallons of heating oil from global company's 5 million gallon storage tank in New Windsor into the Hudson River. In the scenario, the spill derailed a CSX train.
This kind of real hands-on training is important. Most people have not seen a rail car like this. And you don't want to run into this the first time at 1 o'clock in the morning when you have an incident going on.
John O'Mara is a regional spill engineer for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, which co-hosted the drill. Global Companies, which is regulated by DEC, is required to hold drills at various intervals, and DEC asked them to expand the exercise to the state and federal levels. Dennis Farrar is chief of the DEC's Emergency Response Coordination Section of the Division of Environmental Remediation.
You know, because you're on the river here at this place, you know, this is a multi-transportation facility. You know, you have the railroad tracks here. You have the barges loading and unloading here. You can see the trucks distributing the fuel oil and gasoline from here. So this is a nexus, a transportation nexus. So this is where a lot of things, the possibility of an incident is always greater when you're transferring petroleum from one mode of transportation to another.
O'Mara says it's the first such oil spill drill of this magnitude from the DEC in some 10 to 15 years. As for why now?
Because there's a lot of oil coming up and down the river now. It's going to be more crude oil coming down in these type of tanker cars.
Global Companies is a subsidiary of Waltham, Massachusetts-based Global Partners, one of the largest wholesale distributors of gasoline, home heating oil, diesel, kerosene, and residual oil to customers in New England and New York. It has several terminals in the Northeast, including New Windsor. The DEC's Farrar says public awareness of the increase in petroleum transport coincides with the need for emergency response teams to be better coordinated at all levels for any such spills.
But now, because we see the train transportation of crude from the Midwest to the East Coast, people see the petroleum a lot more than they ever did in the past. In the past, the boats came up, they went to a tank in Albany, they put it into a gasoline tanker, a fuel oil tanker, and I got my gasoline or I got my fuel oil. Nobody thought about it. It's one of those things that goes on in the background. But now, because we see, in Albany especially, 100-car trains of tank cars going by, we never saw that before.
John Lipscomb is patrol boat operator for environmental group Riverkeeper. He says he was there to learn.
Our job is to look out for the river. And you know, there's a lot of concern on whether a derailment along the river or a vessel accident could be responded to in a manner that protects the river.
The Orange County Hazardous Materials team was unable to participate in the drill.
They were supposed to play, but they got called out, no kidding, to a real-world oil spill.
Shannon Fisher is the team's spokeswoman. She says the Orange County Hazmat team was called out Tuesday morning when a few hundred gallons of heating oil spilled during a home delivery in Greenville near Port Jervis. The U.S. Coast Guard, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, local emergency response and management teams, contractors, and law enforcement agencies were among those who participated in the drill.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Congressman Bill Owens, a Democrat from New York's 21st District, met with his constituents through a recent telephone town hall. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley listened in.
The Democratic congressman's district is about 16,500 square miles, one of the nation's biggest, and Owens periodically holds meetings with constituents from across the region via phone. He began the forum with an update on his actions and activity in Washington.
Last week, we were in a district work period. I spent some time in Canada, specifically in Ottawa, as we continue to look towards Canada as an opportunity to grow jobs throughout the district. Tonight, I got an update on the farm bill. We also are obviously working towards resolving the continuing resolution, which expires on January 15th, and a need to address the debt ceiling again on February 7th. What I'm hopeful for, although I can't say optimistic, is that we will bring together a large enough piece of legislation that we can responsibly cut government spending, and we also need to make sure that there is some additional revenue coming in.
There were a wide range of questions during the hour-long forum. Several individuals expressed concerns about the federal budget, beginning with Nanette in Plattsburgh.
When you talk about raising revenues, that typically means more taxes. Where do you propose those revenues are going to come from?
Nanette, there's a couple of places where I think that can happen. If we revise the Internal Revenue Code and make it simpler, which will enable us to lower rates, we will, I think, be able to raise some additional revenue.
In the wake of Veterans Day, some people focused on the military and veterans' benefits, including Joseph, a caller from Carthage.
I'm a disabled veteran, and it's taken so long for the VA to get back on my claim. I just want to know why it should take so long when my doctor's already said I'm 100% disabled, can't go back to work, and it should take this long for my claim to go through.
This has been a problem with the VA for years, and certainly now that we have so many more veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, their system is literally bogged down. Recently, there was some reports that they've done substantial work at cutting the backlog, but there is really no excuse for delaying any payments to any veteran.
Some constituents brought up the Affordable Care Act and politics in general. In the northwestern edge of the district, Nancy in Messina brought up an insurance issue that many people are worried about.
Congressman, could you tell me what you think Congress should do to address the issue of millions of Americans who have had their insurance policies canceled?
Nancy, there is actually a bill on the floor on Friday. I'm likely going to vote in favor of allowing people to keep their health care.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1346. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.